learn from children. Children don't go to bed and think, oh, I'm a terrible sleeper. This is something we as adults sort of bring to the bedroom. We bring our anxieties, we bring our worries. Well, our brain is doing what it's supposed to do, which is to problem solve. But we have to take control of the situation and start retraining our brain to say, and now I'm going to sleep. And the way that we do this is just getting your whole home on side to help you.
Your bedroom is incredibly important in terms of helping you to get a good night's sleep. So as human beings, we're still dealing with the fact that we have a sort of caveman physiology. And what this means is that our physiology is kind of set up such that, you know, if we don't feel safe on some level, we won't sleep.
Sleep is important. How you do it, when you do it, and why you do it. But what about where you do it? For most people, it's the bedroom. So how can you create one that encourages rest and relaxation? Can colour schemes change your mood? And why should your bed never face the doorway? I'm Chris Chambers, and this is The Art of Sleep, an original podcast series by Rituals. We'll be taking you deep into the world of sleep and everything that's connected to it, from body clocks to the perfect bedroom and the science of rest. We'll learn how to get the most out of the time you spend in bed. Sleeping, of course, that is. Our bedrooms are perhaps the most private spaces in our homes, and for many of us, the most coveted. There is, after all, a special feeling we get when walking into the bedroom that doesn't really exist anywhere else in our homes, a feeling of, well, safety. Dagmar Brusser is with me here in the studio. She's the creative director at Rituals, and we're going to drift off into the world of sleep with the help of sleep experts and professionals to see if we can understand it better. Hello, Dagmar.
Hi, Chris.
I'm going to ask you a personal question. What's it like in your bedroom? What's it look like?
My bedroom is very simple in the sense that there's not a lot of furniture in, just a bed and two side tables and lamps. I need a sense of calm in the bedroom, and also the color-wise, I have it all very toned down, very calm.
So do you see your bedroom as a sort of a sanctuary?
I think to me it is. You should be feeling very comfortable. I have candles, I have fragrance sticks, everything to make, you know, entering your bedroom a pleasant experience. And it should smell nice for me. Fragrance for me is really, really important.
Well, where we lie down to get our precious rest is a massive part of how good we are at it. So let's start at the beginning. What does a well-designed bedroom look like?
One of the biggest mistakes that people make when it comes to deciding how to kind of approach a bedroom design is that they start with what colour should it be, or what wallpaper should I have, or what sheets and duvet shall I buy?
That's Michelle Ogundahin. She's the author of Happy Inside, 9 Steps to Harnessing the Power of Home for Health and Happiness. And she says the first thing is to establish the purpose of the room.
And that might seem obvious, like its purpose is to sleep, but it's beyond that. It's like, how do you want to feel here? Is it about calm and relaxation? Is it about a place that's very restorative for you? Are you someone that needs a lot of sleep or a little? And it's just really crystallizing that idea. There's no set kind of rules for how a bedroom should be or a set of colors that are naturally conducive to sleep, because that's all very individual. But it really is about thinking, how do I want to feel in this room?
Oh, good. Well, that's one thing less to worry about.
The absolute number one thing with a bedroom is you need to reduce the amount of furniture in it. This is not a space to have any clutter. This is not a space to store things under the bed. It's not a space to have a hobby desk. You do not have your computer in here or any kind of fixed technology. But also it's about having a kind of contained wardrobing system for your clothing so that that's not a distraction. And really focusing the room around a bed. And then the position of that bed will be the number two thing. So ideally, your bed should be placed such that when you wake up, you are greeted by something that appears beautiful to you. So it could be as simple as a postcard taped to the wall. if the architecture of the room permits it, maybe it's a window, but it cannot be a door. Because if we refer to kind of sort of ancient tenets of feng shui, that if you lie in your bed with your feet facing a door, it is apparently akin to lying in your coffin waiting to be taken away.
We don't want that, do we? Well, not quite yet, anyway. But the minimalist approach doesn't need to be boring.
If you do want to do something kind of mad and dramatic and flamboyant in your bedroom, it can only go on the wall behind your bedhead. So the idea is that when you come into your bedroom, you can kind of see it and appreciate it and love that you've painted a sort of hand-painted meadow of flowers on your bedhead. But when you go to sleep and you're facing the other way, you're facing something that's more calm and restful.
And while that may mean that bright colours on the other walls are probably not wise, that doesn't mean that colour should be banned completely.
For me, the creation of a home is a holistic endeavour, and it always starts with the pinpointing of one palette that is personal and exclusive to you, colours that really kind of resonate with you, materials that kind of mean something to you. And then we take this through into the bedroom and often dilute them slightly. And when I say diluting, I mean kind of toning them down either with white or grey so that you're creating again a sort of softer, bathed atmosphere. I think texture is always important, and I love that on the walls too. So you're literally cocooning yourself in an environment that kind of energises you, but in a very gentle way.
What Michelle's describing here is a sanctuary, somewhere where you go to unwind and shut down at night. So let us consider the aesthetics of the most important thing in the room, the bed.
The actual style of the bed, for me, I think it's actually more about the way you dress the bed. It's what actually physically touches your body. So I love to think of dressing a bed almost in terms of clothing it. So it's a series of layers. So there's the layer that physically first touches you, and then the depth and weight of duvets, and then there's throws and all those kind of glorious things, because we are by nature very tactile beings. We respond subliminally and intrinsically to the way things feel around us, and never more so than when we have the least amount of clothes on, to be honest. So to really layer up your bed, and also very natural materials. No nylon happening here at all, please.
I don't know about you, but I'm very particular about my bedroom. I have a favourite pillow, for example. It's very soft, and I take it with me whenever I go away. And I also can't stand untidiness. But Michelle also has a rule about that.
One of the things that can quickly clutter a bedroom is clothing. So unworn clothing belongs only in two places, and that's either in the laundry basket or hung up in your wardrobe. This is one of the real reasons to have no additional furniture in the bedroom. If there's nowhere to stack it, the hope is that you will always put it away.
Problem solved. Dagmar, this all sounds really sensible, of course. Are those things you'd consider doing, or perhaps you've done them already?
Well, even though I'm quite a tidy person, when I go to bed, I just sneak into the bathroom and then change and leave all the clothes on the floor in a pile. So there's definitely some room for improvement.
And what about bed linen? Are you a fan of lots of lovely bed linen?
Oh my gosh, of course I am.
And are you very particular about your pillows?
Yeah, absolutely. I can actually wake up my husband in the middle of the night and scream at him, "You stole my head pillow, that's mine." Because, you know, you always have a favorite pillow, right?
Yeah, I have a very specific pillow, a very soft, light pillow. And even when I'm traveling, I take it with me. I have to sleep with that specific pillow. Now, what Michelle is very clear on is that bedrooms are for sleeping and, well, other stuff too, of course. But these days, we seem to blur the line a lot between work and rest, including in our bedrooms.
Most of us are so leaned into life these days, we don't know how to relax. We don't know how to rest, even when we go on holiday. And so as soon as we stop, we get sick. So I teach people how to invite rest into the body.
Dr. Narina Ramlakhan is a physiologist, sleep expert, and author of several books on sleep, including Tired But Wired.
There are some purists who would say that your bedroom is purely for sleep. I have to say I don't subscribe to that philosophy. My bedroom is my sanctuary, full stop. It needs to look good, it needs to smell good, it needs to be a sensory experience that enables you to let go of the day and drop your shoulders. For me, it needs to be minimalist. It needs to smell of lavender and eucalyptus. The light level needs to be low. I like my pillow to be a certain way. I like the colours in the room to be a certain way.
And while the temptation might be to bring our phones or laptops into bed with us, you know, to watch the latest episode of our favourite series or to app our mum just quickly, really, that's actually a big no-no for the bedroom.
We mustn't use it in the way that so many people are using their bedrooms these days, which is it's an extended place for watching television, for finishing off emails, for checking the share prices, for checking to see what our politicians, what they are up to. I mean, we want to go to bed feeling like the world is a good place. So I really would recommend don't look at the news before you go to sleep. You know, read something that makes you feel good, that makes you feel safe. Think kind thoughts. Pray for the people that you're worrying about. Keep a gratitude journal or read a book that delights your spirit. The bedroom is the place where we can bring all that delight. And of course, intimacy. It's the place where love blooms and blossoms and grows and deepens.
Technology isn't just a distraction. It can actually prevent us from sleeping.
Your sleep won't be as deep. And also the way in which your eyes take in data is quite different from looking at a paper book. The former being not conducive to your mind, slowing down the working memory, which is the engaged part of your brain that you use during the day. It's not conducive to slowing it down and switching off. It's not ideal to have technology in the bedroom because we associate it with leaning into life and being on alert. And on the go.
Michelle agrees.
If it's sitting there blinking or with notifications on, it's a constant reminder that you have not finished everything. But the point is, you will never ever finish everything on your to-do list. You will never answer every single email, and you do not need something right next to your head reminding you that that is the case. We must learn to accept these things and decide that the household is closed for business. Switch it off, leave it downstairs, leave it in another room, and switch your Wi-Fi router off.
Okay, well, the truth is, we know they're both right. It's only been in the last decade or so that we've even been in possession of smartphones, tablets, and any other device we can carry into the bedroom. And was sleep as much of an issue then as it is now? Well, there's even a new form of insomnia, and it's called ortho-insomnia. Its cause? Sleep tracking devices.
Many of these devices are marketed as they will help you to sleep better, but actually they can have the opposite effect if they create more anxiety and worry and fear in a world that is already anxious, fearful and worried.
When you wear a sleep tracking device, you tend to look at it every time you wake up during the night. And then you get stressed if you see that you've only had 5 hours of sleep, for example, and then, well, you can't get back to sleep.
Rather than looking at data, ask your body how it felt when you rested last night, and that will give you the best data.
Okay, so now we've blocked the tech from our bedrooms, we've rid ourselves of strong colours and the sight of dirty laundry, and thought about the materials we want to have next to our skin. So what's next?
One thing that is quite wonderful is to have a bedroom that's east-facing if you're in the Western Hemisphere, because that's a very sort of natural nudge to the body to wake up, because you're going to see the morning sunrise as it rises. However, having said that, I always say that you should have blackout blinds when you sleep, because the point is to manage to get yourself to a place almost of utter sensory deprivation to, again, really allow you to sort of sink into the depths of sleep.
And one thing we haven't mentioned yet is the mattress.
A lot of thought should go into the mattress because that's what's going to be supporting you. And that's a very individual thing that really you just need to hit the big department stores and try them out. Always try before you buy. And if you're a couple as well, both of you should try the bed because some people prefer firmer and it depends a lot on your weight as well.
Now, this might surprise you, but a cooler bedroom also works wonders. Why? Because in order to enter deep sleep, the brain actually needs to be slightly lower in temperature than the body.
So how do you achieve this? Well, ideally, you need to walk into your bedroom and it's almost slightly cooler than you would feel comfortable in initially. So you go, ooh. You want to get into bed and have a warm body with slightly cooler extremities, slightly cooler brain and feet. So this might be a warm duvet with your feet poking out of the bed or a cool fan on your face, on your head. Sleeping with your window open is really important. The way we breathe will directly impact on the state of ease and rest that we're able to create in the body. And the ease of breathing is dependent on the air quality in the bedroom and the temperature. So if it's warm and it's stuffy and dry and centrally heated, all of that lends itself to really poor, fitful sleep. And if you have a natural tendency to do that awful thing called snoring, it's going to make it worse.
OK, so we've got it all figured out. Our bedrooms now look fantastic and we can't wait to sleep in them. But what about those of us living in small spaces? Bachelor apartments, say, or one without a demarcated bedroom?
The point is to learn from caravans or boats or places that really do have to squeeze things into a very small amount of space. And that is to kind of literally elevate your bed, elevate the mattress, lift it up so you're creating it a zone of its own. If you can kind of draw a curtain across it or box it in some way, all the better. But the point is to take it away from the main space. So psychologically, you retreat elsewhere to sleep. So during the day, it's a kind of space away, but during the night, you can retreat to your bed nook, as it were.
And it's not just the physical areas that need to be separated in small living spaces. Narina says the boundaries also apply to what you wear and your mindset when you're in that space.
So the key thing here is boundaries. So while you're working, stay in your work clothes. Don't be in your cuddly, you know, pajama onesie. Stay in your work clothes and do the work that you have to do. And then when you've finished work, switch off from work. Put a lovely scarf or throw or something over your computer, you know, shut it down.
And last but not least, I'm going to address the elephant in the bedroom here, and that is who we sleep with. I mean, if we share our beds with somebody, you know, the usual things, who steals all the blankets, who wakes the other one up with all their tossing and the turning and the snoring, perhaps. You know, critical issues in a relationship.
At the end of the day, if you're really struggling to sleep with your partner, I would recommend that occasionally you negotiate sleeping separately. You know, if you know that you've big day the next day, you know, you're playing football for England or you're giving a presentation to the Queen or something, and you need to get a good night's sleep, then lovingly negotiate sleeping separately. All jokes aside, I have seen many relationships which fall apart because people simply aren't able to sleep together.
But sometimes the solution can be something as simple as looking to other cultures, ones that say embrace sleeping together, but apart, if you know what I mean.
Now, in a lot of European cities, they actually have much smaller duvets, so you actually have your own duvet on either side. But it is about understanding what you need to make you feel comfortable and then adapting your bed to suit. I'm happy to say that I currently sleep like a baby. And it is absolutely one of the most precious things to me. It is essential to be able to kind of reboot and revitalize your body every single night. But it hasn't always been that way for me. It has been a process of understanding what works for me. The important thing is to also kind of learn from children. Children don't go to bed and think, oh, I'm a terrible sleeper. This is something we as adults sort of bring to the bedroom. We bring our anxieties, we bring our worries. Well, our brain is doing what it's supposed to do, which is to problem solve. But we have to take control of the situation and start retraining our brain to say, and now I'm going to sleep.
But sometimes that's easier said than done. The to-do list can be awfully long.
And for this, again, the simplest of solutions. You keep a notepad and pencil by your bed. It can be throwaway, it doesn't have to be special. And every time one of these little thoughts pops into your brain, just scribble it down. Because the point is to just get it out of your conscious brain so that your subconscious brain doesn't hang on to it. And also, take a moment to give thanks for everything that happened today that was great, because you want to try and set your brain on a positive bias so that you fall asleep feeling thankful for things that have happened rather than doing that horrible, overwhelming churn of everything that didn't quite go right.
I have to admit, that does sound much more relaxing than worrying.
the end of the day, in order to sleep well, we almost need to not care about how we sleep. And that's when we all sleep at our best.
So Dagmar, the moral of the story here is that we should play with sights, sounds and smells in the bedroom. Now that you've heard all of this, are you thinking of making any changes to your bedroom?
Well, actually, I don't think so. You know, I'm quite happy with my bedroom and I sleep well. So I think I just leave it like it is right now.
So sometimes it's an instinctive thing, isn't it? You know what's right and what's wrong. And it comes over time. You realize over time that you've got it right or you've got it wrong.
Maybe I'm quite an intuitive person. So maybe intuitively I feel that I need a calm bedroom. I do what I feel is pleasant.
Well, regardless of how we sleep, there's certainly enough these days to keep us up at night, whether it's worrying about our jobs or our families or the state of the world.
Do you think of insomnia as a lack of sleep? Whereas if you are the insomniac, what you feel is the opposite. You feel intensely present. Whereas the person sleeping is the one who's disappeared. You know, the person sleeping is not themselves. They're just a husk of themselves. They've gone, as it were.
Sleeplessness is known to almost everyone. So how can we deal with it? That's next time on The Art of Sleep. Thanks for listening to this podcast brought to you by Rituals. Learn more about how sleep and relaxing enriches your day at rituals.com/podcast.